The image of the vine is one that's used actually quite widely in the Bible. There's quite a lot about the vine in the Old Testament, and indeed in the New Testament, in the teaching of Jesus too, you find the vine features there. And it's a symbol of Israel. It's a symbol of God's people. The vine that is planted and tended by God, who looks to the vine for fruit to be produced. Here's a couple of references. Jeremiah 2:21, I had planted you like a choice vine of sound and reliable stock. And from Psalm 80, you transplanted a vine, addressed to God, obviously. You transplanted a vine from Egypt. You drove out the nations and planted it. So when Jesus started to talk about the vine and what that meant, actually his Jewish listeners would have been very comfortable with that. Perhaps a bit less comfortable with the parable that Jesus tells of the vineyard in Matthew 21. I don't know if you recall that, but the parable of the vineyard in Matthew 21 is where Jesus speaks about a landowner who plants a vine and when leaves it in the care of tenants. And when the time for the harvest comes, he sends his servants to take the fruit from the vine. And the tenants kill and beat up the servants. So the landowner does it again. He sends another lot of servants to claim the harvest from the vine. And they do the same thing. And then the landowner says to himself, what I'll do is I'll send my son, because they're going to respect him. So the landowner sends his son. And the tenants say to themselves, this is the son and heir. If we kill him, we can have the fruit for ourselves. And it doesn't take a great deal of digging into it, does it, to understand what that parable is about. But my point really is this, that this imagery of the vine, both in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, is something that the Jewish listeners would have been very comfortable with. It wasn't difficult for them, it wasn't challenging. But as they listen to this passage, or this teaching of Jesus in John 15, I think they must have become a little bit more uncomfortable. Because what Jesus is saying is a long way, actually, from the traditional Old Testament symbolism of the vine being the people of Israel. Here, Jesus is speaking about something much more radical and much more challenging, because he's saying the vine, for him, is no longer the nation of Israel. It's himself as Jesus. I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. And I want to explore that a little bit this morning with just looking at these three verbs, abide, grow, and bear fruit. Let's just start with abide. I think that's a better word, actually. The NIV uses the word remain. You'll have noticed that perhaps in the reading. But I like the word abide better. It's translating this Greek word, meinete. And it means to stay with, to be in company with through good times and bad. One of the other places this appears in the Gospels is in Mark's account of the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus asks his disciples to remain with him. Same word, meinete, remain with me, as he agonizes over his death. And he pleads with them, doesn't he? Remember the Garden of Gethsemane? And Jesus says to his disciples, remain, stay, be with me. And of course, on that occasion, they don't. What happens? They fall asleep. But that's the same word, and it has the same connotations of being together through good times and bad. And some of the emotional content is captured by that. Actually, I was thinking that one of the phrases in Scots that speaks of some of the emotional content is the old Scots phrase, bidey in. I mean, that has a slightly negative connotation, doesn't it? Because it seems to speak of a sexual relationship outside of marriage. But there's a warmth about that, isn't there? Bidey in. Somebody who stays with you. And of course, abide also has connotations of a long-term commitment. I don't know how long you have to stay to be abiding in. Certainly more than a one-night stand, anyway. You've got to be there a while. You've got to take the rough with the smooth. And we have to choose him day by day, year by year, decade by decade. It's an action word, abide. It's something that we do. How do we do that? Well, by aligning ourselves to Jesus' priorities, by exercising faith that he remains in us, by using graceful means of communication and contact with other people, by not allowing ourselves to be sidetracked by the shiny things that the world offers, but instead abiding in him, staying with him. Second word is grow. And while abide speaks of a long-term commitment, it's not a static commitment. It doesn't remain the same. It changes. It grows. And that is the expectation, you know, as we abide in Jesus, that we will grow. That we will grow in our inner selves, in our inner spiritual life. The gardener prunes the vine so that where there is disease or wastage, that is cut away in order that there might be growth in the rest of the plant. And of course, growth involves change. Presbytery plan's all about change, isn't it? And Morag was saying about the meeting yesterday that there are a lot of people now in our presbytery, and maybe some of you are here, who are hurting because of the decisions the presbytery has made. Decisions about buildings that have to close and congregations that come to an end. And that's not easy. But I think, you know, in some ways, growth always involves change. And the other thing about change, of course, is that it is always experienced, in the first instance at least, as loss. You always lose before you grow. And Jesus is saying something similar about the way that the Christian life works. That there are things that we need to let go of, that we need to grow past. And some of that hurts. It's not easy. We form attachments to people and places and buildings. And then they come to an end. What's important is that we abide. That we abide in Jesus. Verse 7 speaks of my words abiding in you. And that's one of the key aspects, of course, of growth, that we read the Bible. But also that we allow those words, we don't just read it, but we allow those words to dwell richly in us. And that's a wonderful phrase that seems to describe how that word sits within us and with us. So have you grown in your faith, in your inner life, in the last month or the last year? I wonder if I'd asked, you know, at the beginning, rather than saying to you, say something about what you enjoy about worship, to say something about how you've grown in your spiritual life in the last year. Would you have found that more difficult? No, not necessarily. Okay. But it's something that we need to expect that will happen. Are we more rooted in Jesus? Has our prayer habit developed? Do we look for the opportunity to grow our relationship with him? Have we allowed the Father to cut out the bits that work against that growth in our lives? And then this one, bear fruit. Because in the end, the vine is about the fruit that it produces. And in fact, what this passage is saying is that the health of the vine is measured by the fruit it produces. When I lived in the manse in Kukubri for a little while, there was a vine in the rather overgrown greenhouse there. And Kukubri has a considerably warmer climate than East Kilbride, but I was still rather surprised, actually, when I discovered that this vine was producing little bunches of grapes. But they never got above about that size. I think perhaps they didn't have a vine dresser that was looking after them. But the point of the vine is that it produces fruit. We are to abide, we are to grow, we are to produce fruit. What does that fruit look like? What's the fruit that Jesus expects? Well, here's two or three things: Christian character, Christian conduct, Christian converts. All of those can be part of the fruit that abiding in Jesus produces. Christian character is perhaps the deepest of them. If we abide in Jesus, as we grow in him, so our character is formed and reformed. Am I trustworthy? Am I gracious? What do my friends say about me? And more to the point, what do the people who don't like me say about me? What is my character as it appears to other people? Christian conduct is born out of that character. Of course, we all have our own distinctive ways. Some of them more annoying than others. But Christian character is about being the people that God has made us to be in all of that fullness. One of my favorite, you know, verses from the New Testament is John 10:10. I have come in order that you might have life and have life in all its fullness. And I think that means fullness of humanity. There is a humanity, a blessedness about the humanity that we share that is good. One of the let me just say something about that later on. How do I relate to others? Does my life speak of Jesus and his grace? And then there's the fruit of Christian converts, men and women and young people who've been encouraged to fall in love with Jesus the way that we have. Do we see that? Do we see people experiencing the grace of God and growing in their faith? That's part of the fruit that Jesus is looking for. And in relation to this, the thing I was going to mention just a moment ago, it seems to me that one of the things that we have to offer in terms of Christian life and this life in all its fullness is an authenticity to people. And my goodness me, we need that, don't we, in our world. There's so much, particularly for younger people in our world, that is fake. There's just image. It's just what we look like. I mean, I don't do Facebook, really, although I must confess I lurk. I lurk on my wife's account. Well, that's mainly in order to find out what my children are doing. So. But, you know, nobody ever puts up on Facebook a picture of a duff meal, do they? I mean, the number of pictures of meals, for goodness sake. But they're all absolutely fantastic, aren't they? Is that real? Is it? Of course it's not. And there's a whole theme, I think, through our society which encourages not just younger people, but other people, older people, to be actually a bit fake. Because otherwise they don't think they're going to be loved and accepted. And that's where this business of abiding in Jesus is so critical for us, because I know that I'm loved. I know I'm a bit of a pain in the neck sometimes, but I also know that I'm loved. And it enables there to be an authenticity in terms of relationships that we don't have to hide. We don't even have to hide the bits that, you know, are not so good. Although toning them down is probably quite a good idea. And one of the ways of making contact, it seems to me, with that generation is to say there's something really important about your humanity. Let it shine. Don't pretend it's something it's not. Just allow that sense of being loved by God and abiding in him to shine through you. And I think that's a very powerful evangelistic tool, simply to be the people that we are and to be authentic in that way. So abide, grow, bear fruit. Now I want to say something else. And this is more difficult in some ways. I find it more difficult anyway. I want to say something about the vine and the land. Because one of the powerful things about this image of the vine is that it's not only about the plant, it's about the soil that the plant is growing in. And it's absolutely clear, isn't it, through the Old Testament, that God gave this land flowing with milk and honey to his people to be planted in. And not only that, but the other people who were there before that were pushed out. The Canaanite tribes who represented idolatry and disobedience to God, I get that. But this aspect of it, I wrestle with this, I tell you. I don't find this easy at all. How am I to understand this? With its implications that there is a divinely approved ethnic cleansing. That's what we'd call it, isn't it? How am I to understand that? How am I to wrestle with that? And do God's Hebrew people still have a right to possess the land and even to drive out the people who currently occupy it? And those are troubling issues. I find them troubling. And there are those within the Jewish community, particularly among the settlers in the West Bank, who would say, yes, it's our land, all of it. And we have a right to that. And there are those within the Israeli state who would believe that peace can only come to Gaza once all the Palestinians are removed. How am I to wrestle with that? Well, one of the things that I think helps me in terms of that issue is this passage, because Jesus says here, I am the true vine. The promise of God is that those who abide in him will bear that fruit. And I think that what Jesus is doing to some degree is disconnecting this symbolism and imagery of the vine from the land. Now, the land is an incredibly complicated and difficult issue in the Middle East, and I don't want to oversimplify that. But I think that Jesus is taking this image of the vine and restating it in the way that actually the early church viewed circumcision, becoming a Jewish person in that way, as unnecessary to Jewish faith. But what Jesus is doing here is he's saying, I am the true vine. This necessary connection with the land in which his people were planted is changed. It's not the same as it was. And this passage helps me in that way, because I believe that it's in Jesus as the true vine that the fulfillment of God's people is to be found. So abide, grow, bear fruit, and may the word of God dwell richly within each one of us. Let us pray.